Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Every single night, the same arrangement, I go out and fight the fight. Still I always feel the strangest estrangement, nothing here is real, nothing here is right. I've been making shows of trading blows, just hoping no one knows that I've been going through the motions, walking through the part. Nothing seems to penetrate my heart. I was always brave and kind of righteous. Now I find I'm wavering. Crawl out of your grave, you find this fight just doesn't mean a thing.
She ain't got that swing.
Thanks for noticing.
She does pretty well with fiends from hell, but lately we can tell that she's just going through the motions.
Going through the motions.
And somehow, she's not even half the girl she... Oh...
Will I stay this way forever? Sleepwalk through my life's endeavor.
How can I repay?
Whatever, I don't wanna be. Going through the motions, losing all my drive. I can't even see if this is really me. And I just wanna be.
Two minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of June in the year of our Lord 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high atop the Milkpacking District here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for joining us on this Friday, and welcome to day 12. If you would like to be part of today's program, you can do that. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. That is Rick at RickEmerson.com. Don Taylor can be emailed. That is Don at RickEmerson.com. D-A-W-N at RickEmerson.com. Or if you like, if you'd like to be, if you'd like to take an alternate route, if you'd like to distinguish yourself in some way, you can email her at ShowPony. That is all one word, not two, not hyphenated, not separated. It is not Florida style. It is ShowPony, S-H-O-W-P-O-N-Y, at RickEmerson.com.
No dot, no underscore.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's all just as it sounds. We make it as easy as possible. It is straightforward. It's direct. It's simplified.
No umlaut.
Stripped down. It's ShowPony at RickEmerson.com. Let's see. What else? The text box open on the website, and also you can get at us via Skype if you like. That is Rick Emerson Show. That is our username. That is Rick Emerson Show, all one word, via Skype. I have nothing really to say at the beginning of the show except for, I have the list of things we're going to do today or attempt to get to, or the list of things that I will refer to and then sort of forget about later on. And then I have a, I have something that somebody should do just so I don't have to do it myself. First, a list of things today. We got the snuff watch, which seems impossible because it doesn't seem like this many people could possibly be dying, and yet they are. So we got a snuff watch coming up today, geek watch coming up today, taser watch, and top five that I assembled for Wednesday with Mr. Eric D. Snyder and Anna Griffin that we didn't get to it yesterday, and so we'll do it today, and blah, 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 blah. So that's coming up later on today. We'll do the top five from the date that has been selected by the Hand of Kronos. That is December 8th, 1973. December 8th, by the way, the unluckiest of all music days. And really, the unluckiest of all days, period, as I think we've determined over the last couple of years. So, really, it's somebody's always getting fired or, you know, shot on stage. So, December 8th, 1973, we will do the top five songs from that date. Also, I don't know if I said this or not, Big Jim Willig is going to be here with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 today, talking about one Mr. Jonathan Candy. So, John Candy, we'll do all of that. We got Snuffwatch, Geekwatch, Taserwatch, Top 5, Humor Me, John Candy, and Don Taylor tracking the following stories for your edification on this Friday.
Robert Gates has a few harsh words on his way out as head of the Pentagon.
You're all stupid!
A woman who had her face ripped off by a chimp is ready to start eating burgers again. And we discovered that if you paste your kid's face over the photos of naked ladies, that doesn't actually count as kiddie porn.
Okay, then. Attention, whoever, creeps. By the way, somebody suggested I should bring Show Pony. They don't even say Dawn. You should bring Show Pony some carrots and apples on Fridays as a treat for a week well done. Or a bag of oats.
Yeah.
Way to go, Show Pony.
Thank you. Thank you. Or just a huge sugar cube.
Yeah.
Which is like 90% of my diet anyway, so
just,
why not?
Just a salt lick.
Yeah.
Mm. Salt lick. This says, my money says you won't get to the top five. How much money are we talking about? Because really, I can be motivated. There's not a lot that'll motivate me, but I mean, the promise of cold, hard cash, it really is, that's enough to do it. Let's see, somebody's calling at the beginning of the show. Why would that be? What would be the point of that?
Why not?
But I mean, why?
Because it's Friday. They had something important they want to say. Something
really?
They need to share.
Do you think that's likely to be true?
Maybe they're new and they can't figure out how to log on, so they're calling for tech support.
All right. Should we take this or should I flip
the
coin?
All
right.
Please.
Fine. Okay. Hello, sir, madam, as the case may be. How can we help you on this Friday?
All right.
Thanks much. Thanks for getting us off on the right foot.
Welcome to Friday.
Appreciate that. Well done. It's called a momentum builder, sir. Thank you. Thanks for that affirmation right out of the gate. I appreciate it.
Did they think
it.
That you wouldn't actually answer the phone? I mean, what was that?
Well, here's the thing is... Oh, Christ. The thing is, like, I'd answered the... They could hear me. I answered... The thing is, when you call in, if you are the first or if you are the only person currently in the queue, like, if you call up and you're, like, the second or third, like, as sometimes happens, always when someone else is always on the phone for some reason. I don't know why that is. But if you call while somebody's already on the phone, you get put in hold. You know, you get put in the box. And I don't think you can actually hear anything there. You just have to sort of... Because it quit ringing... You have to just sort of take it on God's good humor that you are, in fact, connected. But this guy, whoever this was, if you're the first person to call or if you are the only person currently on hold at that moment, you call in and you don't even really go on hold. You just get picked up but muted. In other words, you can hear us. Like, you can hear me saying, hey, in a second, we're going to pick up the phone. Or, like, we're going to talk to, like, Steve or this golem or whoever it is that's on hold right now. You can hear us. We just can't hear them. So whoever that was heard me talking for like 20 seconds and then said, should we get this phone call? Let's do it. And then I said, hello, and click. It wasn't even like they hung up before that or they were unsure of what was happening. They actually heard us speaking, heard us introduce the call, and then chose that moment to hang up.
Maybe because I said, maybe it's someone new who's having trouble connecting, and they heard me say that, and they went, oh, that really is what I want, and they're going to mock me.
Maybe it's because they heard me... decide, you know, that maybe we should just flip a coin as to whether or not they were actually worth speaking to.
So they didn't feel valued.
That's, well, but I mean, you know, it turns out that we did in fact answer the call. So, I mean, I'm just saying it's a,
yeah.
that ended up being a plus for them.
No, we opted in your favor.
Well, we didn't. Dawn
person.
Did. Dawn decided you were worth speaking to. I myself was indifferent to your call. And then now have ended up being totally against it because it was just a waste of everybody's time.
Yeah.
So thanks for that. All right, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503. Nothing like wasting the time of your fellow men to make yourself feel important and big. Isn't that right, sir or madam?
Several minutes we'll never get back.
Must feel good to diminish the time of others.
In fact, right. Don't ever call here again.
You are denied permission to call ever again. You're not allowed to rent here anymore either. It's 503-505-6. It must feel good.
Calling us is a privilege, not a right.
That's right.
It must feel good to just belittle and devalue the precious time and seconds that other people have before the Grim Reaper comes to embrace them in his cold, sweet grip.
I don't come hang around your desk at work and then wait and get your attention and then just walk away without saying anything.
Son of a bitch. Die. Die. I hope you die. All right. It is the... hello to you, everybody. It's Friday. It's 503-5... You know, it's going to be somebody who was just calling to say that he liked the show.
I know.
And then his boss walked by and he had to, like, hang up, or, like, he was driving, or his kid accident, his baby hung up the phone.
Yeah.
Well, in any event...
If that's the case, don't die.
What can you do?
It's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Did you do the headlines? Yes.
I did. And you've forgotten them already.
What were they?
NATO face transplant, pasting the picture on the ladies' hip bodies. Porn.
And that was today you did that?
Yes, mere minutes ago. It seems so long ago because between that and this,
we had
that whole phone call.
Hours of our life wasted by somebody who called and then didn't have the common decency to stay on the phone.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's fine. Whatever. You know, be that way. See, now it's like, now they're not just hurting the audience. Now they're actually hurting me. Now it's actually affecting me because so much time has passed betwixt the reading and the recitation, the recalling. That,
the whole rhythm of the show is off, and we may never get it back.
Entire thing's going to go under the crapper. I might just call it a day after this. I might just decide that
we
after.
Just go home.
Seriously, no, I'm saying I might just pull the plug on the entire operation as of today. Really, I might just decide that enough is enough. We're just going to South Park the entire thing. Just go home.
Except Jim's coming, and then we wouldn't be here, and he'd be confused.
Yeah, I suppose. He would just sit in the studio. Just sit in the studio like an abandoned child at a Walmart, just waiting for mommy to come back.
He'd just sit out there in the kitchen waiting for us to open the door, and we never would. And then he'd look at his watch and go, oh, my God, it's 7:30.
Just be sitting in the kitchen. All right. Somebody says, hey, guys, remember that time like 2 minutes ago when Guy called and hung up? That one time was awesome.
All right. That was good radio.
Is there a way, is there a way you guys can just turn on Skype to run automatically so people could call in and just say stuff on the stream without someone attending to it? Then you guys could just get up and leave and say, all right, you guys entertain yourselves. I could totally do that.
Oh.
Seriously, I could actually set up this studio to where the Skype was actually up and running, because the way that it's set up for some goddamn reason is when you call in, I don't know why they do this. The way that the phone is set up is that when you call in, if somebody else is already... And don't use this as just an opportunity to just screw, like, Aaron Mesh or somebody the next time. Actually, if it's Aaron Mesh, screw him. I don't care. But if somebody's already on the phone and then you call in, it puts them on hold and moves you to the front of the line, which is stupid, which is not the way that it should be. But as a result, that does mean that we could have an entire weekend of, like, it's an entertain your own goddamn selves weekend, where it's like you just call in and just say, hey, everybody... How about that fishing we all like to do? That's sure something.
Could they talk to each other, or would they just be heard on the stream?
No, it would just be one person talking to everybody else in the stream.
Okay, and then when they hung up, like the next person in the queue or whatever, next person to call it could do that.
Who likes miniature golf? Except there'd be nobody to answer. And then it would just sort of, and then you'd have to hang up, and then the next person, it'd be like an open mic night, except you wouldn't be able to hear the audience. You know, you call them and go, hey, that blonde chick on Hee Haw was kind of cute. And then everybody, you know, and then everybody kind of goes, ha, or whatever. Except you'd have to imagine that because you wouldn't be able to hear it. And then they
and
would
then
hang
Thomas up. Thomas Gill could call and he could explain how something works.
Doing it wrong. That's what he'd say. all right.
Cheryl could call and just say, fail, and then hang up.
Sounds like an exciting new format in the offing. That could be the...
Maybe we could have just another channel on the stream that's all it is.
That'll be Rick Emerson 2.
Yeah.
All right. And then Seamus notes, until someone calls in and threatens the president and ruins all the fun. No, that's true.
Oh, yeah.
That's exactly. And you know, that would take like a minute and a half before that took place. All right. Hello. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. And all that stuff I said earlier, still true, whatever it might be. I'm just going to make this observation. Speaking of things that people should put together so that I don't have to do them myself, not just a channel where just the Rick Emerson audience threatens the president. I mean, well, you know, that's not all the internet is for. I was thinking about Twitter, and you know what somebody ought to do? Just because I think it would get a lot of followers, I think somebody ought to create a Twitter, you know, an account where all they do is they just tweet fantastic quotes from The Wire that are not the quote at the beginning of the episode. Because The Wire does that thing where they put a quote like at, after the opening credits, but before the episode actually sort of begins proper, where it just says, "Man got to have a code." You know, Omar or whatever. And they put that, there's like the title card that comes up right before the actual, the regular, you know, the meat of the episode begins. Somebody should just do a Twitter feed that is just nothing but awesome quotes from The Wire that are not the title card quote at the beginning. And I got three to start with, and they're all from the same episode. They are all from last, from this episode, I would say last night, but this episode I was watching last night, which is season four, episode four, I believe. None of these are spoilers, by the way. But there was just this, like, the greatest just series of quotes. Quote the first is when Bunk is over having dinner with McNulty and Beatty. And he has this bottle of wine that he got from the convenience store. And he hands the bottle of wine to Jimmy, and he says, as he's handing the bottle of wine off to McNulty, Bunk says, "The sommelier behind the plexi says that guy's kind of dry." The sommelier behind the plexi says that kind's dry. And then there was two later on, both of them from Omar as he was sticking up the same convenience store, I think, where Bunk purchased the dry wine from the sommelier behind the plexi. It's where Omar's getting ready to go in and he's getting ready to rob the joint, and one of his sort of compatriots, one of his henchmen, notes that there are high-end security cameras everywhere, and isn't he worried that his image will be caught on camera as he is knocking the joint off? And Omar says, "No, I'm my own trademark. You feel me?" Which is awesome. Like, who says that? The answer, no one. David Simon characters. "I'm my own trademark. You feel me?" And then, and again, these are not spoilers, but it's like Omar goes in, he robs the joint, he sticks the place up, steals the guy's, like, stash and, like, his ring and his jewelry and his watch or whatever. And then Omar tosses, like, a $10 bill in, and he asks for a pack of Newports after having robbed the guy, of course. Robs for the guy, then tosses a 10 and asks for a pack of Newports. The guy, like, wheels the Newports around in the little plexiglass, you know, thing, in the little Lazy Susan thing. Hand, you know, gives the Newports back to Omar, and then Omar says, "Where my change, yo?" Which is awesome. And he says it with just, like, the sound of cleanest contempt in his voice. Like, it's just inconceivable. Just like a non-fathomable affront that the guy did not give him his change after giving him his Newports, after, of course, Omar had robbed him. Just three fantastic moments, all of which I would have put on that Twitter account if it existed. But it doesn't, and it's like I don't really have the energy or the inclination to do it myself. Mm-hmm. So,
in any event.
All right, there you go. But this isn't the first night in your new place, though. You've been in the place, your new apartment, for a couple of nights now.
A couple of nights now, yeah.
Have you actually managed to get the mattress into the bedroom?
Oh, yeah. No. We have the problem is we have a mat. We're at the moment, we got the whole, like, the college experience. It's the mattress on the box spring on the floor. And I'm old, and frankly, with the, you know, the bad knee, and I'm old, and I realized that you kind of need that extra couple of inches of the bed frame, because it basically feels a little bit like you're just getting up off the floor every time you get out of bed, which is no fun. So
it seems like it ought to be easier for your aged body, though, that you're closer to the floor.
You'd think, but no, because then you have to, like, hoist yourself up. You need knees and leverage to be able to, like, get yourself, like, up from a... basically, a crouching position is what you're at when you're, you know, your butt is on something that's only this, you know, 7 inches from the floor.
She's down there on the floor like Radon Chong.
Yeah, it's just, yes. everything is just an adventure. Eric Snyder came over yesterday. He gave me a call last night and said, "Well, if you need any help with anything," I said, "Well, what are you doing, like, now? Because we still got crap in the van."
And he said, "Oh, that was just theoretical help." Said,
"Oh, damn, now I'm stuck."
I didn't really mean that.
But yeah, no, he came over and spent about 45 minutes or so helping Patrick haul stuff out of the car while I stayed upstairs and went, no, put that
over there. A little bit to the left.
No, that's wrong.
Swap these around. Yeah, excellent. So. Do you just have the whole thing of, like, a bunch of unlabeled cardboard boxes, or are you careful about, like, kitchen, bedroom?
I was very careful during the first three quarters of the move, up until we got to that last part where it was like, just get everything out.
Up to when you were boxing up the cat?
Now it's like, oh, yes. Now it's like open stuff up and go, oh, here's a bath towel and my silverware.
Yeah.
You know, so, and then yesterday we discovered the next door neighbor has a dog when this really big, beautiful brown boxer stuck his head through the place in the fence that there's a slat missing. And apparently the dog next door has known for a long time that this is where he can stick his head through. Because he just came right up and just stuck his head through the fence. And I said, "Hey, how you doing?" And then my dog went, "Hey, a dog." And we had to figure out how that was going to go. And Patrick, being Patrick, immediately just went, Bella, get over here. I said, no. See, no, you don't want to make her think that there's danger. You want her to think it's a good thing that she's meeting the other dog. Yeah, Patrick has always been a little unclear on this whole he inspires emotion in the dog from his tone of voice.
Oh, I see.
So
if he indicates that it's something to be terrified of, then it's like Bella will freak out.
Yeah, then
she will learn it's a thing to be afraid of.
Yeah, she'll think that there's something wrong.
Okay.
Whereas if you go, look, there's another dog here. How nice is another dog here?
I guess
there's
nothing to be afraid of.
So she walks over, and the dog, like, they sniff each other's faces, and then the boxer goes, woof, right in her face. And I was, like, braced to see what would happen, and Bella just went, yeah, okay, whatever. And just turned around and walked away.
Excellent.
Just like,
not unlike Patrick himself.
Yeah, so that was kind of cool, but we're going to have to do that because having another dog just stick his face through the fence.
You know what? Here's the thing I'm surprised you haven't been all over. I'm surprised you just haven't been, I don't know, pitching a fit and screaming, you know, like Lucy Van Pelt style about this whole thing in Vancouver where they're trying to, like, ban pit bulls.
I had the story about some people who had a protest. I was going to read it yesterday, and we didn't get to it. I'm not going to throw a fit and pitch a fit or something.
Because that's one of your things.
It is one of my things, and it is horrible. If I lived in Vancouver, I would be throwing more of a fit about it. The thing is, I just have so many other things to worry about at the moment that, it's kind of like...
Stress is too finely spread.
It's way over there somewhere. But, I mean, it's just so patently stupid. We've talked about this... The information is there.
I don't know anything about pit bulls. That's the thing. Like, I'm not saying you're bearing false witness. I'm saying, like, all I know is what you told me, which is that the whole thing is sort of, like, blown out of proportion.
Yeah, it is. Pit bulls are dogs. They are dogs. You know, there are all your breeds of dogs have certain traits, some more than the other, but there is no such thing as an inherently killer dog. There have been times in history when people believed that about German Shepherds, they believed that about Dobermans, they believed that about various things, but there are no breeds of dog that are inherently more aggressive. Pit bulls can have a tendency to be a little bit more dog aggressive, but they are not inherently people aggressive. If anything, they're the opposite, because that's pretty much been bred out of them. Because if you have a physically powerful dog, you don't want it to attack you. You're going to actually breed that out of the dog over time. So the thing is, pit bulls are great dogs. They are really smart. They tend to be very loving. But, because they are physically kind of muscular and they're just physically powerful dogs, bad people with bad intentions can train them to do bad things.
So this is the pit bull is not unlike a firearm or perhaps a cheese grater.
Yeah.
That if you give it to somebody bad, they're gonna grate exactly the wrong thing with it.
Because I mean, the thing is that you could abuse and mistreat and psychologically torture Max to turn him into a dog with aggressive killing tendencies, but he's still only going to weigh, 8 pounds?
Yeah.
He's only going to do so much damage. If you have a muscular dog that weighs, like, 60, 70 pounds, and you train it, you torture it and psychologically condition it to fight and to attack things, then you have a weapon. But before it's been conditioned that way, it's just another dog. It just wants to, like, lay on your couch and be hugged and love you and eat food.
The idea of just turning Max into a weapon is sort of hilarious and awesome, though. I kind of wish I could do that. I mean, it's not like it would take too much effort at this point because he's just, because he just has, like, no sense of scale or proportion or his own size. But the idea of just making him, like, of just having, like, a bloodthirsty, tiny little pocket dog is hilarious. I should totally do that.
So, the thing is that breed-specific legislation is idiotic. Plus, there are places on the web you can look. I can't remember the exact words now, but you can Google it, where there's actually, like, a visual test you can take that shows you a bunch of pictures and says which of these are pit bulls.
Right.
Because there are only actually two AKC breeds that are classified as pit bull. There's American pit bulls, and I believe there's just like, I think there's a British pit bull. But Staffordshire Terriers are also considered pit bulls. There's also a lot of just dogs that just have that kind of physical tendency, also crossbreeds. And so it's like, if you're going with a breed-specific legislation, like you're saying you're banning pit bulls?
It's like, what does that even mean?
Yeah, what does that actually even mean?
Well, that's like everything is just such, like, there's almost nothing that is a purebred anything at this point, regardless of what the American Kennel Club tells you, because everything, evolutionarily speaking, nothing is a pure anything.
You need stricter legislation when it comes to animal cruelty cases. You need to actually, you know, if people have dogs of any breed and that dog is attacking people or attacking other dogs, then that dog should be taken from them. It should either be like, you know, they should maybe get one chance, maybe, to take the dog to some kind of behavioral therapy and see if they can train it. But in most cases, if a dog has actually savaged someone, the dog is not necessarily unredeemable. But that person, whoever has that person, obviously has no business owning a dog.
Yeah, because they've either done something wrong or they just don't know how to get the dog under control.
Yeah.
You'd be interested to know this. Apparently outside Denver, no pit bulls and no breeds with a certain seeming parentage of, quote, wolf, which is, and this is actually in the city ordinance, ligers, which are a real thing. Ligers, lynxes, jaguars, pumas, bobcats, wildcats. These are all listed in the city ordinance. One may not own a jaguar, by the way, just FYI. So in case you were wanting to do that.
Well, Bella, my dog, is a pit bull mix. And the thing is, she doesn't really, particularly as she gets older, she doesn't look particularly pit bullish. She doesn't have a real big blocky head. She has a longer, thinner nose. She has longer legs, all basically because of whatever the other dog was in her parentage. And so, you know, when it comes to things like renting an apartment or like whatever, we've just always said, you know, she's a shepherd mix. Because she is a pit bull mixed with a shepherd or pointer or something like that. But it's like, you say pit bull, and with some people, it just raises
these
ridiculous
big
red flags.
Yeah. My whole thing, okay, here's a question I've wondered. You know, there's those places where you can, supposedly you can take your dog and they'll do like a DNA test to tell you like what the dog is. And I wonder how accurate that those things are. Because like we have that whole hilarity with Philo where the paperwork claims he's a dachshund. But it's like the part of us does actually kind of want to know like what the hell he is. Like what is in that dog? Because he's just so bizarre looking. But I just don't know whether that's kind of a scam or not. I mean, you know, if you go to the place where they analyze, they do whatever with the dog's DNA and then they tell you. Like I don't know if they can actually give you like a pie chart and show you what went into the dog's makeup or if it's just a sort of a vague overarching kind of background.
I don't know. I have no idea. I never even heard of that until you talked about getting it for Philo.
Yeah.
And I guess it makes sense that exists because there's so much money in the dog breeding industry.
But I wonder if
you'd want to be able to check if things are purebred if you have to.
For that reason, though, I wonder if it's likely to be a scam. You know, because it's in other words, you know, that is a place where if you pay enough money, they will just, you know, it's obvious. As for example, you know,
and he's 1/18 Chihuahua.
As has been, well, you know, like the Freakonomics guys did that whole show a few weeks ago where they were talking about it was like Wine Connoisseur magazine or something, where they basically revealed the fact that if you just bought a large enough ad in Wine Connoisseur, I think it was Wine Connoisseur magazine, if you bought a large enough ad that they would just rank the wines you served in your restaurant as like some of the world's rarest and most delectable vintages, even if they were just crap, even if it was just like bottom shelf. And so I don't know, I would inherently distrust any sort of non-scientific group that did that or anybody that had a vested interest in the outcome. I don't really care all that much, but it is. I just look at his like huge pool cue legs and his tiny little head, and I just kind of wonder what's going on in that body of his. We should do a couple of news stories here, then we'll take a break. We'll come back with Mr. Big Jim Willig on the other side. By the way, to the several people, first of all, apparently there is already on Twitter, there is just a Twitter / it's just @TheWireQuotes. So that is @TheWireQuotes.
And if you're interested later when Jim Willig comes back, I have a rather embarrassing story regarding things I realize I forgot to pack and left behind in the apartment for the apartment people to have to deal with.
Fantastic. Let's see, what else? For the several people who have asked me this, no, I did not purchase, and no, I do not know where to find for sale the They Live posters from the Alamo Drafthouse that apparently sold out in like 7 seconds. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Jesus. So the
I can't. It's somewhere in my head too because I can't remember the name of the artist who does those.
I think his name is Stephen Frain, and
They Live poster was amazing. His work is great.
So it's the guy who does all the Obey stuff, which you've seen all over Portland, which I think they have right now at Bishop's Barbershop, and I have several of the Obey shirts. They were on sale. They're
okay,
sold
I'm thinking
through
of someone else then.
Yeah, they're sold through Mondo Tees, MondoTees.com. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you can go to ain'titcool.com, and there's a whole article about it. They showed John Carpenter's They Live at the Alamo Draft House. And for the event, the Obey artist. And again, you've seen a lot of the Obey skate art. It's Obey stuff. It has the sort of Soviet lettering, and then it's got the it's got Andre the Giant on it. And so you will that is a thing you will have seen if you are, you know, if you follow if you follow that kind of art, or if you follow any sort of like skate culture or anything, you'll see some of that stuff.
Okay, I was thinking of something completely different, because there is a website, alamodrafthouseposters.com.
Now this is Shepard Fairey.
Yeah,
that I'm thinking of.
Okay, I was thinking of some other stuff.
Yeah, Shepard Fairey is the guy behind the Obey art, and he made for the Alamo Drafthouse showing of They Live a Obey style poster that looks like a propaganda poster, but with this sort of skull-faced guy behind the podium that says Obey, and he's holding up the card. Anyway, so but they did this limited edition run of these Obey posters for They Live, and they sold out in like 7 seconds or something. They were at MondoTees.com, but they went on sale this morning at like 6 a.m. and they were gone within an hour. And for some reason, which is all well and good that people think I'm a player, that I'm a power broker, but people are emailing me asking if I have the inside line on it, and I do not. So
like you know a guy,
seriously, and I don't. Yes, it is. Yeah, so Shepard Fairey is the name of the guy. For people who are asking, no, I missed it just like everybody else. I got up. I actually set my alarm and was going to try to buy one of those, and they were already gone. So I'm hoping that they'll do like a, because these are all signed and numbered, and I'm hoping they'll do a cheaper run. I'll put the poster itself actually up at rickemerson.com/pictures here in just a second, so you can see what I'm talking about, because it's just freaking fantastic. But no, they sold out like almost instantly, and there's no word on whether or not they're going to be others. But it is one of those things that, I mean, as much as everybody likes to think of themselves as having sort of boutique tastes or niche interests or something, or being, you know, having unconventional, however unconventional your taste is, by dint of the internet having like 100 billion people on it, no matter what niche interest you have, there's going to be enough other people there that if when they put something on sale that is in limited quantities, it's gonna vanish almost instantly. And so that was the case with this. But I will I'll put a photograph of that up so you can see it. Let's get a couple of stories done here, and then we'll take a break on the other side. We'll come back with Mr. Big Jim Willig. He's going to be here with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 today, talking about Mr. John Candy. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Well, a California appeals court has ruled that a man shouldn't have been convicted of possessing child pornography after he used his computer to Photoshop photos of his 13-year-old daughter's head onto bodies of adult women in graphic poses.
I didn't know it was his own daughter. I mean, not that it makes him any less of a creep if it's somebody else's daughter, but still.
California's child porn ban, punishable by up to 3 years in prison, requires a real child to have actually engaged in or simulated the sexual act depicted, said the 6th District Court of Appeal in San Jose. In this case, because the pictures didn't show minors engaging in sex acts, the state appeals court ruled it didn't apply here. The court said the law was intended to prevent exploitation of children. Interpreting it broadly to apply to computer-altered photos might violate the constitutional standard the Supreme Court established in 2002 when it struck down a federal law banning virtual child pornography. Justice Franklin Alaya in the 3-0 ruling said, although we may find such altered images morally repugnant, we conclude that mere possession of them remains protected by the First Amendment. So the court ordered a judge to resentence Joseph Gerber, who was convicted in 2009 of possessing child pornography and furnishing drugs to his daughter. He was sentenced to 13 years and 4 months in prison. In his original trial, the court said the teenager's mother suggested to her daughter in 2008 she worked to build a relationship with her father, from whom the mother had been separated for about 12 years. During their visits over the next few months, the girl said, Gerber gave her marijuana, which she had used before, and cocaine, which she told him she wanted to try. During one of the drug sessions, she said Gerber asked her to pose for pictures, and she agreed, but burst into tears when he told her to strip down to her underwear. She later told her mother she called the police. Officers searched Gerber's home and did not find photos of his daughter in her underwear, but saw pictures of her head superimposed on 7 pornographic photos of women's bodies on his computer drive.
Now, at what point did the mom become aware of, like, was she aware of, like, the cocaine and the weed and the anything, or is...
That I'm not sure.
Because, I mean, she's estranged. It sounds like the mom was estranged from the father as well as the... So, clearly the mom realizes that she didn't want to be around him. And it's not like I had no idea he was into this sort of thing. It's like you always know. Yeah. If you know a guy who's just creepy or skeezy, you can tell. You are aware of that on some level. So is the mom going to get charged with anything, or is it just...
It doesn't seem like it. No.
Ah, that's great. Swell. So she's going to be free to have more children that she can then send into harm's way.
Yes.
This is one of those things, though, where it's like, as horrible as it is, you kind of do have to sort of... I guess you just have to sort of roll with it because that is one of those things that they always cite as the downside, if you want to call it that, of living in a democracy. Because then it'll just be some guy with a charcoal sketch of child porn that they decide to stick in the clink somewhere.
Yeah, so. There are a lot of things that are morally horrible and just creepy that are not necessarily illegal.
Yeah. Because then you get some like Michael Diana guy that gets stuck in prison for drawing, dirty funny books. So
let's do the Taser Watch before we bring the show.
Here's your Taser Watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson Radio program. Don Taylor with your Taser Watch.
The owner of a cow in New Hampshire is upset after that cow was tasered by police several times. Houdini the cow strayed off of Wendy Bordelot's property last week. While she and others were trying to woo the cow back home, a cop tasered it to prevent it from crossing Mammoth Road. The electric charge had no effect on Houdini, who eventually crossed back into Bordelot's property. That's when she said the cop reloaded his taser and tased the cow at least three more times.
Tasing a cow.
Wendy Bordelot is upset with the officer, saying that the multiple tasings were unnecessary as the cow had already returned to her property.
Well, but at that point, you're already in it. You're already pot committed, so you might as well just...
Wait a minute. That had no effect on the cow at all. What if I try it again?
And it's Houdini the cow?
Houdini the cow.
Okay. And so the cow was wandering away. Mm-hmm. This is a cop?
Yeah, the cow gets loose. The cow goes over to the other side of the road.
It's
moseying. A bunch of people are trying to lure the cow back over, get it across the road. Cop goes, I know, I'll tase it. What? And that apparently actually, didn't really affect the cow, but she wandered back over anyway. And the cop said, for whatever reason, said, let me tase it three more times.
Well, probably just as, the taser doesn't work on people who are like 150 pounds. A cow is substantially larger than that. So it doesn't really, it seems
but if
like.
If the cow's already back where you wanted it to be, why?
I'm amazed, by the way, that the taser was actually even able to, it probably had no effect on the cow because cows have got that, like, the thick, raw hair, and then it's like the thick skin underneath it. So the taser probably just bounced off.
Possibly.
Sounds like it was probably a stun gun if he was able to do it several times.
Well, he said he reloaded it, so...
Or maybe it was a taser.
Maybe it was a taser.
So, but it didn't really seem to have had much of an impact. The cow was almost totally indifferent to the jackass cop who just decided, hey, there's a living thing. Maybe I'll tase it and just see what happens.
I don't get a chance to tase stuff very often. Let me just keep doing it.
All right. Well, there you go. Sometimes it's like, you like to think that the world isn't what you sometimes think it is. And then occasionally you realize the world just is that. All right, there you go. Cop tasing a cow, over and over and over again. Yeah. All right, there's your Taser Watch for Friday. You shouldn't do that. Not because I would do this, but only because if you do that enough, somebody will find that and they'll take it out of context. And then it'll be, hey, it's my Don Taylor ringtone. And then it's all bad.
Yeah.
Somebody says, the stuff that wraps the cow that you're thinking of is called leather. Okay, don't be a smartass. It's not called leather.
It's not called leather while it's still on the cow.
No, I think it's just called
it's
skin.
It's called hide, yes. I believe, while it's still on the cow.
All right, we will do this. We'll come back on the other side with Mr. Big Jim Willig coming up later on today. Top five songs from December 8th, 1973. Also, another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Stay right there. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
There's a tall, thin man standing in the shadows. When he calls your name, his voice is strong and clear. It's a dark and smoky place, so you can't quite see his face. He pulls you close and whispers in your ear. And he tells you he was born into some money, but it didn't mean he had to sit around. And he knows a thing or two about the things that you should do if you don't want to take life lying down. First of all, hang out a lot with him and Mary won't mind the pain. Be ringside at the rumble in the jungle. Make friends with Hunter S. and Jackie O. When they shoot poor Bobby down, you wrestle Sirhan to the ground. Love your friends and miss them when they go. You should write a book or two and start a magazine. Even if it never makes a dime, you should swing out by your feet above the circus ring. At the very least, throw parties all the time. Time and tide will never care. Not so far from here to there. You just go. You try, drink a cocktail, wear a tie. Show a little grace if you should fall. Don't live another day unless you make it count. There's someone else that you're supposed to be. Something deep inside of you that still wants out. And shame on you if you don't set it.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
If never I'd met you, I'd never have seen you cry. Not for a first hello, we never have to say goodbye. If never I held you, my feelings would never show. It's time I started walking, but there's so much that you'll never know. I keep telling you a hard luck woman. You ain't a hard luck. Child
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. I just sent you the Obey, the They Live Obey photo, by the way. You can see that at rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for June 10th. So rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for June 10th. It's freaking awesome. It was also signed, numbered, went for $50, and is now totally unavailable. So, you know, that's a thing that hopefully they'll do like a mass release of at some point. But it's quite something. Joining us here in just a moment will be Mr. Big Jim Willig with another installment of Humory Comedy 101. Also, various comedic and whimsical observations about the human condition in a relatable and compact form. That's not Jim himself who's in a relatable and compact form. His form is imposing. His form is imposing and unique in a way that cannot be duplicated by anybody. Isn't that right, Big Jim Willig?
Damn right.
Hey, by the way, you got a Style and Ghostbusters shirt on. It almost...
Thank you.
I don't mean to be snarky. It doesn't look like a thing from Walmart.
No, it doesn't.
I would not have expected you to say that it was from Walmart for a mere $7.50.
Absolutely. They have a whole line that they're coming out with of nostalgia 80s pop culture type t-shirts. The only reason I was even interested in going to Walmart in the first place was my roommate came home with this just awesome Thundercats
My roommate,
t-shirt.
You mean gay lover?
Well, I don't like to put labels on things, Mr. Emerson.
Okay, sorry,
but
yes.
So Enrique comes home after cleaning several pools and says, look at new shiny. I'm like, yes, Enrique, it's very nice. I Papa needs a back rub. But no, he had this awesome Thundercats t-shirt on, and it didn't just have the original Thundercats, but it also had the other survivors of Thunder. It had like Lynxo and Pumaira, and
of course, sure,
yeah. All the mutants, Sly and Monkey and Mumra. I don't think Mum Mutt was actually on the t-shirt. But either way, a good 99% of the original cast. I'm no berserkers or anything like that. But anyway. I said that, dude, that's awesome. He's like, yeah, I got it at Walmart. You got a whole bunch of shirts. You got to go check it out. So I went, and of course, I was lucky enough to find a couple of shirts in my size. The Ghostbusters shirt that they have currently, I had to wait a while because most of the other ones that were similar but not quite big enough were all like butter stained and everything else from all the other hand traffic that had gone through there, like a freight.
There's this big Cheeto fingerprints around the neckline.
There are people just pawing through trying to get to the bottom.
That's what almost fits.
I don't see no double XL down in there. You keep on looking, Lamont.
Sad thing is this is a double XL.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you for...
Double XL is just the funny... It's the one that rolls off the tongue the easiest,
really
which is
does.
Why I go for
Jim
that.
Jim Willig is an imposing man.
Yes.
He's a man of substance.
You're barrel-chested is what you are.
Thank you.
You're thick with manhood, as opposed to just being spongy, which is what, you know, a lot of people sort of are.
Absorbent and, yeah. So, but no, I hate to, you know, to just sort of like arbitrarily throw Walmart heat without being a sponsor of the show, but like,
nah,
yeah.
I don't
if,
care.
If you're interested.
This entire studio, see all this black curtaining?
Yeah.
Walmart, baby.
Hello.
With a Walmart staple gun as well. Which is a thing that, like, and as much as I make fun of Walmart, it's not even, I mean, I can make fun of a thing while still using the thing.
Yeah.
I can make fun of a thing. You know, it just is like we all, you know, we all realize that a certain amount of fast food or junk food or snack food is terrible for us and not really good, like, in the strictest, like, Wolfgang Puck sense of the word. But it's like you're sitting here shoveling it into your fat American mouth anyway. So it's like I can totally.
Says the skinniest guy in the room.
But I'm just saying, like, you can know the nature of the thing.
Yeah.
While still admitting the fact that you are not immune to its charms.
We, Patrick and I, doing all of our busy moving stuff, and we hadn't eaten anything, like, all day. And I wanted a big iced tea from McDonald's because McDonald's actually has really good iced tea.
Need that sweet tea.
And
it actually is quite good. I can vouch for that.
And I didn't know what I wanted to eat, and I saw they had the big sign that said 20 chicken McNuggets, $4.99. And I said, do you want to split some chicken McNuggets? And he said, sure. And we got the chicken McNuggets. And neither one of us had had chicken McNuggets in years.
Yeah.
And we're sitting there in the car going, these are really good.
They are really good.
Oh, my God.
See, that's the horrible secret of McDonald's food is that quite a lot of it is actually really, really good. Eric Schlosser wrote that in Fast Food Nation. He talked about Fast Food Nation and how it was, you know, everybody sort of railed on McDonald's, and they did have a lot of, you know, labor issues, and, you know, and they, you know, in other parts of the world, their environmental practices were terrible. And he said, but, like, the horrible thing that people don't actually say is that their food tastes really good sometimes, especially if you are in a certain frame of mind. And he's like, of course, because there's a guy in a lab, you know, a guy named like Heinrich, whose whole job is just to sit there and make the thing taste fantastic.
Well, we now have heroin in sprinkle form. Perfect. Put it in a flurry.
Well, one of the things I noticed about McDonald's when I went through a period where I was eating just really, really super low carb, and I wasn't eating any sugar, any refined sugar at all for months. And then at one point, I went to McDonald's and I got a burger, and if you're not eating anything else that has refined sugar in it, you start noticing it everywhere, like, it appears. And their buns, the McDonald's buns, are really sweet.
Yeah.
And you don't normally really notice that. But there's a lot of sugar in their hamburger buns.
Yeah, it's like sugar and like the refined nature of the flour. I mean, where it's just like that ultra white flour that goes into there. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of bread actually. And I don't mean like pastries or desserts, like just regular plain old, allegedly plain old bread is in fact really sweet in this country. It reminds me, it's like, what's his name in the Requiem for a Dream where he's talking about he's like, you know, no refined sugar. There's even sugar in the water in this country. And it's like, we really are just like one step away from that. But at the same time, it's like...
And we're not really one step away from that. When I lived in Los Angeles, one of the big water companies is Sparklets. They're kind of like Arrowhead, you know, and stuff, where they bring you the big bottles of water to your house. And I read an article that they add sugar to the water. Not enough that it has to be listed as an ingredient, but there is just enough that psychologically your tongue will notice some kind of a slight difference.
Oh, that's so much better.
That this water tastes better than tap water.
That's excellent. See, I mean, really, you know, in a way, in a perverse way, that's sort of admirable because they found, you know, I mean, because who? I mean, because it just seems, it's just such a horrible, repellent idea. And yet there was at some point, a bunch of guys sat around a table in the boardroom and went, all right, everybody in favor of adding sugar to the drinking water?
Yay.
Yes. All right. Motion passes.
There's,
and like,
there's
awesome.
There's sugar added to Marlboro cigarettes, which someone pointed out to me when I was in culinary school and I was smoking cigarettes and stuff. And we were talking about why people choose the cigarette brands they do. And this guy goes, well, I smoke the Marlboros because they taste better because they're sweeter. They add sugar to them. And I was like, seriously? And he's like, here, smoke one. And I lit one up, and really, that once you're looking for it, you can see it.
Well, now they've just made it really overt with those, is it the Marlboro that has the crush?
Yeah.
The whatever you
the
squeeze.
Camel crush.
Yeah,
camel
you squeeze
crush,
the thing, but it's like,
yeah, that's the menthol, though, isn't it?
It's
a variety of flavors, I think, actually. It's more than...
You can smoke it regularly, and then if you break the little bead in the middle, which basically just has like peppermint oil in it, it becomes a menthol. So you can have the best of
it's
both
like
worlds.
Gum with a squirty center.
Yeah.
It's like an afterburner.
Ooh,
you know, if you're like when you're, you know, it's you know, when you're flying Firefox.
See, if they could do that and give me my damn club cigarettes back.
Oh, see, no.
I miss my clothes.
See,
cigarettes.
I don't know where the hell you are living or shopping that you get. Lara, just like 2 nights ago, she was like doing something. She was like sitting there smoking a clove cigarette.
She's not smoking a clove cigarette. She's smoking a clove cigar.
See, now we've had this discussion before, but it looked astonishingly similar dimension-wise to a cigarette.
The package is pretty much the same. It is slightly...
No, but I mean the thing itself.
It is slightly fatter. You just only really notice it when it's like in your fingers and putting your... It's slightly fatter, and it's a different kind of tobacco. It's cigar tobacco.
And it just crosses the line into cigar.
Right, because flavored cigarettes are now illegal in Oregon.
Interesting. All right. Well, so there's that.
So much to take in.
Walmart. Oh, yeah. So anyway, I got no, I have no, as much as I make fun of Walmart and many of the people who shop there, I am one of those people because here's the thing about like, you know, this outfit that we have here is that it lets you have all the smugness of being a small business owner.
Yeah.
So you can complain about taxes and liberals and, you know, whatever. and then, but it's like when we went to sort of to actually do the sort of sound dampening and the curtaining and whatever this room. you know, like, what am I, you know, like, where am I going to go? Someplace where they actually pay their workers a decent wage? No, passing that cost along to me. So this entire room, all of this curtaining and the sound dampening and the staple gun with which it went up was done, I think, for less than $30.
The fountain that just flows with children's tears really just kind of pulls everything together
and,
in the room.
And then just to sort of like, and then just to keep it, you know, trill all the way through, made my wife do it. So made her do the shopping, made her actually do the curtaining and the stapling herself.
I lived about a quarter of a mile from a Kmart for 2 years in Tualatin and had never set foot into it. And then I went in to get something. It was, I needed something like a fan or some basic household item that they didn't have at Fred Meyer. And so I said, I can get this at Kmart. Went into the Kmart and then just started walking around Kmart and was like, wait a minute, you mean I can buy pants for $14?
Yeah. It's astonishing.
Kmart's awesome.
It doesn't, I mean, it almost doesn't seem possible that you can buy things at Walmart for as little as you can. Yeah. I mean, it's like the thing of, back to McDonald's, like the thing of McDonald's selling like the 29-cent cheeseburgers or whatever, which maybe they don't still do that, but I know they sell that. There's like dirt cheap food there, and you go like, how? Like, I know they don't, there's not a lot of like meat in there maybe, or they're paying their people very little, or, but it's still like, how is that possible?
Well, a lot of it is the evening out thing. Like, you know,
economy of scale.
Well, they make a fortune on their sodas, for
yeah,
example,
that's true.
Because soda is, it costs them like half a cent to do a soda that they're charging you $2.50 for. And then I think that there's a larger profit margin on some things than other things. Because like a Jack in the Box is the same way. If you go to Jack in the Box, they're the big board with their burgers and their sandwiches, everything is up in like the $4.50, like just under $5 range, which is starting to get a little pricey for fast food.
Yeah.
But if you look at like way down at the bottom, it's like our value menu. You can still get a jumbo jack with cheese for like $1.79.
Yeah.
They, I think they're banking on the fact that most people just look at the big board and go, I'll have the jumbo cheese extreme deluxe thing. Do you want a combo? Sure, I'll pay you another.
Why not?
$1.50 for like 15 cents worth of soda and french fries.
I would see, though, that the majority of the people that go there are ones that, you know, if you have the means to eat at a nicer type, food dispensary, one would. You go to a fast food because you only have a couple of bucks. Yeah. You're looking for to get the most amount of food to for that dollar. So you're more often than not looking at like the dollar menu. Predominantly, I feel.
Also, by the way, and I don't know that this is true, but I know that they do this at certain locations, and I suspect they do it at the location on Powell and like 30th. That McDonald's at Powell and 30th, I went through there a couple weeks ago, and it was to get that iced tea, which is awesome. And there's that little thing where when the guy said, we'll take your order whenever you're ready. And I said, oh, I'll have an iced tea and whatever. And he said, okay, do you want anything else? I said, no. And then there was like a little click, and a different voice said, pull up to the second window, that's going to be $1.75 or whatever. And I do know that McDonald's in many locations, they now outsource their call box guy. So like the call box guy at McDonald's is in, of all places, Fargo, North Dakota. And Fargo, North Dakota has one of the lowest unemployment rates in the country. There was actually an article in the Wall Street Journal a few months ago about Fargo, North Dakota. And they're saying, as weird as it sounds, like this is a great place to live right now if all you need is a job. If you just need to be a guy who like gets a job because you just got to make a little money. If you live near or around Fargo, it's great because they are getting, for what they've got a lot of tax incentives built in for things like that. So now McDonald's, in a lot of their locations all around the country, the first guy you talk to at the McDonald's drive-thru is in Fargo, and he's at a call center, just like a customer support guy with a little headset on, just like in The Matrix, and he's just going like bam, 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 down the line, keys in your order, which appears on the screen at the McDonald's here. That's where the second crazy guy then says, okay, pull up to the, you know, second window. And he just basically has to be there to hand it to you and to make change.
So you realize what you've done now. You've made me want to now go to McDonald's as soon as I can.
Just to witness it.
No, just to be like, okay, you know, when he asked me for my order, I'm like, okay, where are you right now? Are you inside the building? Or can they give you that information?
Are you allowed to say?
I have totally done that with them.
Is it safe?
There are customer service people who, obviously, they are either told to lie and tell you they're in America, or they're just told to not reveal that they are in, like, Bangladesh. You know, they just, like, if they don't actually out and out lie, they will just they will try not to reveal where they are, because I think they know that it gives the company a little bit of, you know, taints the company's image in the eyes of some customers. And so it, like, every now and again, if I get the feeling that that's happening, like, I'll just sort of like, I'll press them a little bit on, you know,
crazy weather today, huh?
Yes. Yeah, so, sir. So, Mr. Hashir, where are you? Where am I calling you about? Where are you at right now? I'm in California. Really? What's the capital of California? Dallas? Okay, yes. That's great. That's wonderful. Excellent. Somebody says...
I have to check on that, but we'll get back to you.
Somebody says, we have to find a way to make penises have a strong sugar flavor. I like what we're on.
We already do.
Well done, sir.
We sell something at my store that basically is like a pop rock type of material.
Really?
That is used for oral satisfaction.
Is there anything you people don't sell?
You people? Whoa, also, Let's take it back a notch.
I'm
here.
Sorry. I didn't mean... I meant Jews.
Porn clerks, thank you.
also, penises, particularly in an erect state, they can be dipped in any number of substances.
Okay, Cynthia Plastercaster. Jesus. Weird. Let's see. Somebody,
Dawn the Dipper over here.
Speaking of...
that was my groupie name, yes.
Speaking of that, let's see. So we have, somebody says...
Just roll this in a little bit of frosting sugar here.
Somebody says... I don't even know where this came from, but somebody had sent this to me, because I must have been talking about this the other day. Somebody says, I knew a girl who was really into that electro play you guys are always talking about.
Yeah.
She had an electrified toy that she put... And then he says this. She had... The strange, like, randomly... puritanical nature of our audience is sort of hilarious to me. That they are both puritanical and then prurient, but in alternating shades.
I'm writing to talk to you about something like dirty and sexy, but I'm not going to use any naughty words.
She had an electrified toy that she put, you know, in there. claimed that it gave her the best orgasms she had ever experienced. Mm-hmm. I had to take her word for it. I did not wish to experience it in any way. So you all, because we were talking about this the other day of like, where do you even stick that thing, and wouldn't it make you just want to whiz?
No, actually.
Well, you were talking about like something electrical going into someone's urethra, and I was like, wouldn't that just make you need to pee?
Electrical sounding rods or electrified sounding rods we do carry as well. Traditionally, they're not to be used anywhere above the waist because there is a potential for affecting the heart.
Oh, that's like those TENS units. Like people who kill themselves occasionally with those things. And it says in huge letters, like, do not cross the heart with these.
Yeah.
So I'm told.
So, but no, there are several different power boxes that we have. My favorite is the PES, which the power box for that looks like for the old Lionel trains. Like you'd have that little thing hooked up with the wires to it, and you could like get the train to go around the track with it. Looks almost exactly like that. And you can like dial up the voltage.
It's a Christmas morning mix-up just waiting to happen. Where's Junior?
Oh, Grandpa, my train smell funny. But yeah, we have both toys for him and for her, but they're traditionally for like the lower swimming suit areas, not for the upper.
Mm-hmm. Somebody says nipple clamps wired to a car battery are a big hit, apparently. Not making that up.
Guantanamo, maybe.
Some sort of modulator to control the intensity.
By the way, this is a good segue for me to tell the story I was saving for when you got here.
Oh.
As I mentioned between the show, I just told you, I moved.
Yay.
And the first part of the move. Awesome, like a well-oiled machine. Got a storage unit, put all stuff in. Last part of the move, a little bit more hectic.
Yeah.
Like just throwing crap in boxes, doing stuff. A friend came over, helped move our bed, and then we moved like some stuff out, like the table next to the bed. I dumped everything out, and we moved it. And we went home, and we were doing things. I was like going through things like, what did I do with that bag, that duffel bag full of shoes? Where are all the shoes? You know, that kind of thing. And I was just dropping off to sleep the other night, our first night in the place. It's like 1:30 in the morning. And I'm just like, finally, like, I'm tired. I'm in pain. I'm going to sleep. Just about to drop off to sleep. Nudge Patrick, and I go, oh, my God, did you pack my vibrator? And Pat looks at me and goes, no, you just left it on the floor in the bedroom.
Oh,
and I was like, oh, really?
So it's like somebody.
Seriously?
A different. So we were talking about things you left behind as door prizes for the next couple that lives in, but this is something you're not.
Well, it's going to be like the apartment management people who come in like to replace the carpet and to take the various things that we went, let them throw that away. That kind of thing.
Yeah. It either is. I mean,
we're not getting this deposit back. Whatever.
I really hope it was like a menagerie of just really interesting things like vibrator, hatchet, and like Crayola crayons.
Well, I mentioned before certain things like I was moving and I found like a $20 bill in a cookie jar. I was like,
sweet.
Hey, $20. Bill, awesome. Wrapped the cookie jar and then later went, I think I just left the 20 laying on the counter.
Oh.
So, a lot of little things like that. And then just things that'll be kind of like a lovely scavenger hunt for them to go, oh, look, they left like 3 Pyrex baking dishes because Dawn only needed 2 and didn't want to pack everything. And now apparently they're also going to go into the bedroom and find, like, you know, a vibrator just still plugged into the wall, just laying on the floor.
It either says something really good or really bad about your relationship that you never thought to bring the vibrator with you. You know, it's not necessary or you've just written the whole thing off.
Yeah, I had so many other things on my mind. I wasn't thinking about, you know, that. But now, of course, I have to replace that.
Now you get to go vibrator shopping.
That's true.
You can get one of the little Hello Kitty kind that has little balls inside that roll around.
No, see, I don't use that kind. I use the kind that's a neck massager, the kind that looks like a little hand mixer.
Oh, the magic wand.
No, it's
from Hitachi.
I think that's the one that looks kind of like a microphone, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
This is like the I think it's either wall or sunbeam, but it's the kind that it actually looks kind of a little bit like a hand.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. There's that thing, yeah.
The KitchenAid vibrator.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Like you can make a milkshake, you know, if you're...
The puree speed is really the best.
Not to sound too creepy, but if you're in the market, come talk to me. I'll introduce you to one of my coworkers, so it's
people.
Not that creepy. But yeah, and let me know, and I can get to you at cut rate prices.
All right.
By the way,
it helps to know a guy.
The question, a question posed here immediately following the phrase in all caps, "Oh Jesus God, no! I should have tuned out." Was what kind of vibrator needs to be plugged into the wall? Is this someone who says we can't get enough power just from batteries? I need 120 volts to make this happen. No, it's so one doesn't have to replace the batteries.
Right. It's a different style, and it's much more convenient to not have to.
Because
be
DeWalt
replacing
adult
batteries.
Entertainment
from Makita, of course.
It's my Black & Decker. It's
because presumably, theoretically, this is a thing that would be.
I need something kind of heavy duty that's really going to hold up under stress.
This is you're re-entering the atmosphere.
This is in theory. Something that would be used repeatedly by, let's say, a clinical massage performer,
right.
or a sports physician for injuries.
Because the thing is, it actually, with some of the different attachments have, it actually really is awesome on the muscles on the back of your neck.
But nobody assumes you're buying it for that purpose.
No one does. And honestly,
is that where the G-spot is? Man, I was way off.
Yeah, and honestly, I very rarely use it for that.
Well, what's funny is for the Hitachi, which we do sell, we sell a couple of the other knockoff type brands of that, but if you open up and look at the instructional manual, it shows you all over the body where the massager can be used, and it's got like the pressure points in the back of the shoulders and the arms and the back and everything else. But then it just says, like, in very large letters, "Do not use for mysterious calf pain."
Yeah.
And
that's clot. That's a clot thing.
Yeah.
That's because if you have a mysterious calf pain, it could be a clot which you then knock loose with the thing, and then goes right into your heart and kills you.
Wow. That's I don't know.
No, that is a thing that occasionally people will die of, I've talked about this before. Ever since I was a kid, since I was like 6 or 7, I've had persistent leg pain, and so I just, if you ever see me, like, I put down just handfuls of Advil, just several times a day, because I've had leg pain for most of my life for whatever reason, and I don't think it's anything fatal because I'd be dead by now, so it's just been there like for 30 years, but I just sort of live with it, but that is one of those things that used to freak me out when I was a kid, because apparently persistent and strange leg pain is a thing that could be a clot. And then you'll see about a guy who falls off a horse or just, bumps his leg on a curb or something, and then a clot just goes on the inside of, and then just like floats on up to the heart and then just kills you like 10 seconds later.
Yeah.
So that is why they don't want you to do that.
Why don't you live in like a bubble, like a soft, inflatable environment?
Seriously, it's like that thing they put on aspirin where you're not supposed to give it to your kid if they have a cold, because like if you have like a one defective kid out of a billion, their head's going to fall off or something, or whatever that is. You're going to get Rye syndrome
Brian.
Or something. So
my brother Brian, it's not funny.
What is Rye syndrome? Right. Isn't that what you get if you have aspirin? If you give aspirin to kids, it can like this. You know, don't give this to children.
Gets very dry. I think.
It's you turn into a bread. That wasn't that funny. Somebody said, "Has Dawn injured her vagina playing basketball with it?" No. Everyone, stop!
It's more
stop
of a, more of a
now.
High lie activity. I feel
it was the ping pong balls. I kind of
whoa,
no,
reeling
see,
it back.
No, no.
Is there a dump button?
Go to
Can
the
we...
mattresses like that. You know what I wonder about though is that we've talked about that Fleshlight thing. That's like money in the bank. Because apparently that thing.
Dude.
I think it was like a Stern who like used one of those on the air and said he's like all the alimony I could have saved if only this had existed.
The thing is, the Fleshlights are nice and they are very much functional and popular. We do sell a bunch of them. However, there is a company from I know brace yourself, shocker coming, Japan, of all places, called Tenga. I believe it's Japan. And they have a series of toys for men, basically masturbators, that are ridiculously out of this world. But the problem is, most of them are like one-time uses. So you're dropping like $20, maybe $30 for something that you use only once.
What makes it out of this world?
The texture of the actual toy, the inside texture, all of them come pre-lubed.
Is it like you just have no time? Like, you've got a meeting in 10 minutes, but, you know.
I'll say this. Truckers are our number one purchasers of not just the masturbators, but also, like, the the slabs, where it's basically just, like, maybe a third to a quarter of a female's, you know.
I've got to be to Des Moines by 6 a.m., but I mean,
these Bibles have to be delivered.
A man has needs.
I need a lady, but I don't have much time, so just give me a piece of a lady.
The part that doesn't yell or fight back. That's pretty much all. I want
the part I don't have to buy pancakes later.
What do you have in like the Helen Keller section that I could possibly? No, that's horrible.
All right, but I'm sorry to everybody.
Maybe I suppose if you were like on death row and you were only going to like get one last orgasm, then maybe like you pop for the premium version of
I don't think that
Japanese thing.
I don't think that's a box you can check.
I don't think that's an option. Yeah, no. I
could
think
you ask for that instead of the last
or
meal?
Yeah, it's not below like Senka.
What do you want for your last meal? I don't want a last meal. I just want one of these, and you hand over the catalog.
I think you'd probably have to...
A4. I like it.
Okay, then. All right. Hello, everyone. All right. We're here with Mr. Big Jim Willig so forth. I don't even know what we were talking about. I don't know how we got off into that. I have nothing. I have no... But I will say that really is the thing. The internet has been a tremendous boon to that, because I remember the first time that I knew somebody who used the who bought porn like through the mail. It was this guy Scott that I was a girl with whom I was involved many years ago. She and I lived down the street from her gay friend Scott. And the fact that he's gay sort of plays into the story here in a bit, because the way that we found out that he ordered all his porn through the mail was because he bought it all from the Adam and Eve company. And the Adam and Eve company had a sort of I think it was before they really had refined their operation. And the deal was, what if you bought like 5 VHS tapes or something, like they would just give you a free one. But whoever was like at the fulfillment department, they would just like grab something off the top of the stack and just throw it in. And so they were always sending him this straight porn. And so he would buy like 5, you know, gay porn tapes. And then he would just it was like it sickened him. He would just be sort of like, and then they sent me porn and it's all vaginas and breasts. But then he figured out that like Rick Emerson was willing to give that a good home. And so he would call us over like once a month when his new shipment of porn came, and invariably, no matter how much he complained, they would send him straight porn. And so then it's like he would call us over, and then we would like get the whatever. But it was right after that that he said he was able to start ordering it online. And I mean, I think at that point, then you just got this exponential explosion of, you know, where you were able to have like an entire industries and companies that were just based on selling things like that, unlike the, you know, Trucker's Delight or whatever, because there was just, you know, because I think that's the sort of figurative plain brown wrapper aspect of the whole thing actually contributed a great deal to their success.
Yeah, I think that's the fact that it's supposed to look like a flashlight, ideally, but it's basically just like a very large, oversized, cartoony case that resembles a flashlight. But then you pop the top off and you're like, oh, that's what that's for. All the Tenga stuff. There are like there's the company name and then like the product name, and then everything else is in a language that obviously you can't read, but it's also not in a very traditional shape. And so until you really open up and take a look at it and realize what's inside, they're like, oh, okay, I get it now. So
this is like when somebody created the phrase "names of films do not appear on hotel bill."
Yeah.
Yes. Also, I'd like to respond to an email I just got and say no. My metal hip does not jingle like sleigh bells when the vibrator is running.
Says you. All right.
Al Green kind of drowns everything else out, so how would you know?
Let's see. What else do we have here? Somebody says, I did not believe that anything could weird me out more than Dawn's discussion of her incest dream. I have been proven wrong. This also says, this is something we talked about last hour. We were talking about MTV canceling that show Skins or Skin or what?
Skins.
But I was talking about the show Undressed. This guy, and a man, by the way, Peter, says, Dude, all caps, I love / hated Undressed. MTV would have it on for like 4 hours at a time, and if I ever came across that show, I could not stop watching it, even though I hated myself for doing so. I didn't know anybody else who remembers it. Well done, sir. Best show ever. Pete, I knew I was not the only person. I bet that's available. I don't think they ever put it on DVD. I bet that there's a thing that you can probably find online, and that I would feel okay about doing so, you know, because I don't think you can actually rent it. I don't think it's actually for sale. But it was this half an hour length MTV soap opera.
Yeah.
That they would see, and
it's
they
like
would
softcore porn, pretty much.
But it was great. But it was a soap opera they aired for these in these long blocks, like as filler programming, late at night, and it all took place at like 2 a.m. And it seemed to all take place at like some apartment building or like in a dorm room or something. And it just ran forever at night, and then one day it was just gone. I have a feeling it was just something that they contracted to air, and then they realized that they didn't really like it, but they had to like burn off the episodes that they'd already paid for, and so they just stuck them on at night where, like, normally they would put, like, Liquid TV reruns or something, and they just it ran there for a couple of years, and then it was just gone.
Which, why they didn't do more of that, you
I don't know.
Or was it Alex Winter's Idiot Box.
Oh, yeah.
Which featured such awesome segments as Sell Your Sister to Guar.
I forgot all about that.
Loved that show. It was it was kind of like a more live-action Liquid Television kind of stuff.
And I don't, you know, and I don't want to be just some other the idiot Gen Xer complaining about MTV or whatever, because it's, you know, it's not like MTV was ever good. I mean, it was just a bad that we didn't recognize.
Yeah.
It was a bad that happened. But MTV was good.
It was all we had.
Well, that's the thing. It's MTV was good the same way that Chicken McNuggets are good, where it's like, you know, it's not actually good, probably, in some objective sense. But, I mean, at the time,
continuous exposure of it will kill you. But...
And it was enjoyable, I suppose. Yeah. It filled the long, lonely evenings. But it's like there would be – but the charming thing about MTV in its early days was the fact that it was so low rent.
Yeah.
And that you got the feeling that they just didn't have enough stuff to fill the hours, and they would put anybody on. And so you would just get, like the Alex Winter thing, or you would get like or they would just run that weird show that was just made for like rave stoner Amp, where it was just like nothing but like Chemical Brothers songs for like seven hours or something. And it would be, you know.
And then you had like Headbangers Ball, and then all like 120 minutes with Kennedy, where it's like all alternative type stuff. As well, my all-time favorite show that was on MTV that wasn't music-oriented was Fear, which was like Blair Witch meets the Real World.
I forgot about that.
That was like, I saw the very first episode of that and was so enthralled, and I needed to get smokes like halfway through it, so I just, as soon as the commercial break ran downstairs, got my car, flew to the nearest mini market, bought smokes, flew back, recorded the whole thing and watched it again and again, and every time I got just as scared as I did watching it the first time. The other episodes, they kind of like were hit or miss, but very first episode was great. That one and the one where they went to the West Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia. That one was really cool, too. So.
I have totally forgotten about that.
So rad.
So let's see. So our friend Seamus, as he always does, is sort of using his robo-arms to scour the internet and has conjured up a bunch of YouTube episodes of Undressed. And that's less interesting than this. Best comment made on one of the YouTube somebody's posted a lot of the full episodes of the show on YouTube. Best comment made on one of these episodes of Undressed on YouTube. I started watching, this is the quote, says, I started watching this before kindergarten, I believe. I would get turned on before I even knew what was going on exactly. This has forever ruined me. I am a 19-year-old nymph. Excellent. Did I mention that my wife works till midnight tonight? That's awesome. I have got the rest of my day blocked out. Oh, except my mom's coming into town tonight. Oh, now it's all awkward and icky.
But not impossible.
No, that's what I'm saying. Well, moms can be distracted. You tell her there's like a quilting store or something down the street, you know? There's like a place where they sell scrapbooking materials, and she'll be gone for hours.
Yarn Expo down the street.
That's right.
For sale.
Let's take a brief break here. We'll come back on the other side. We'll do some more news. Big Jim Willig here with... another installment of Humor Bee Comedy 101, and we'll get to, I swear to God, we'll get to that, because I've been, now it's like a quest, because I've been told I couldn't do it. We'll get to the top five as well. That is on the way. It is the Rick Emerson radio program, Go Nowhere. We're back right after this. Stay right there, y'all.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Sunbeam.
Listening to the Emerson News Network. Listening to the Emerson News Network.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
A Pennsylvania man faces charges after police said he exposed himself at a Dauphin County shopping center. The 35-year-old man pulled up next to a woman with his pants around his knees at the Colonial Common Shopping Center in Jonestown Road. They said it happened around 1:30 Tuesday afternoon. He was later located in the parking lot at the mall. The only reason the story is notable, man's name, Tandy Wood.
Really?
Oh.
I wonder if at that point, like when he was 11 or 12, he just figured that there was no other way. There was no other life path for him.
We have a mugshot of Handy Wood in the Dropbox
really?
For you.
Excellent.
Yes, in
case okay,
you
I'll get that.
See what Handy Wood looks
get
like.
Get that posted. Fantastic.
As someone who's from Pennsylvania originally, I am just filled with the sense of, yeah, that's kind of it right there. It's
sort of a better luck next time.
Yeah, that's kind of like that's what you get when you come to Pennsylvania.
Yeah. But for this life, you know, yeah. this is who I am. He's just going to embrace his own inner nature. Let's see. I'll get that. Does he look exactly like I would imagine?
Not
or
really.
Really?
No.
Does he look like the kind of guy who would have his pants around his ankles when he pulled up next to you?
What does that look like?
Well, I don't know, you know, does he have a hint of skis?
He didn't really look that skeezy, honestly.
No, he doesn't. I'm trying to he looks vaguely familiar, but I can't quite figure out why.
I think it's just one of those things where, well, my name's Handy Wood. What are you going to do?
I think there's a little Handy Wood inside all of us. I think that's really what it is.
That really is true, Jim.
We should all long to find our inner Handy and help him come out. He's not in the parking lot.
I think we all know where Handy Wood is coming from.
Yeah, literally.
Let's see. All right. By the way, just the number of comments and just emails that I've gotten over the last 10 minutes of people just comparing their own vibrator possession and or usage and or behavior with yours is really, really. I mean, it's on the one hand, it's nice to think that people, you know, that they that there is no wall of artificial shame between us, that we can have an open, honest communication.
That wall is real.
Yeah.
Is there anything to learn from this sampling?
Just that apparently everybody on Earth owns several vibrators, and many of them of apparently incredibly heavy duty or industrial design.
Yeah, we may need to make an additional segment to cover the need. I would say
maybe Wagner can do this as like some sort of offshoot of like iPhone sluts. We're going to just be in like vibrator hose.
We could. I think our first step is an online poll to let people share with us their vibrator preferences.
So if they go like Hitachi wand or like magic, you know, whatever.
It's Hitachi Tuesday.
Please don't do that.
Sorry.
All right. Here's Don Taylor.
Well, let's bring it down a little bit and do our snuff watch.
All right. Here's your. I have no idea who's dead for this, so we'll just.
All right.
Here's your snuff watch for Friday. Here is Don Taylor.
Mitek Pemper. The man who typed up Oscar Schindler's list that saved 1,200 Jews from the Nazis, died in Germany at age 91.
Oh, is this the guy? Is this the Ben Kingsley guy?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Pemper died Tuesday in Augsburg in southern Germany and will be buried in the city's Jewish cemetery on Friday when municipal authorities will order flags to be lowered to half-mast in his honor. Born Mieczysław, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, Mieczysław Pemper in 1920 in the Polish city of Krakow to a Jewish family. He was imprisoned at the Nazi concentration camp Plaszow, where he worked as a personal typist for the feared commandant Amon Goth. That's where he linked up with German industrialist Schindler, whom Pemper, at great risk to his own life, supplied with a typed list of names of more than 1,000 fellow prisoners to be recruited for work that was decisive for the Nazi war effort. Schindler, an ethnic German from Czechoslovakia and a member of the Nazi Party who first sought to profit from Germany's invasion of Poland, is credited with saving the lives of some 1,200 Jews through such work schemes as well as bribes paid to German officers. So Augsburg Mayor Kurt Gribble said, with Mieczysław Pemper, the city has lost an important builder of bridges between the Jewish and Christian religions and a contributor to reconciliation.
I'm sorry. And just because everybody's sort of doing it, but Schindler.
I barely knew her.
All right. And also, here's the thing about World War II and the Holocaust and Nazis and Jews is that in ways both good and bad, the bar has just been so permanently raised for all the rest of us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, regardless of what some guy in a message board says, like Hitler really has, you know, he set a high standard for just being like an absolute bastard. I mean, really, he just raised like evil dictum to a whole new level.
If you attempt to try and like top that, you're going to be the last one.
I mean,
like,
pretty much
second to last on the list.
You almost have to be like Galactus, Eater of Worlds, to outdo Hitler. But by the same token, it's like on the other side of thing. It's like no matter what you do, well, it's, you know,
I'm no Schindler.
Well, my puppy comes from a no kill shelter, you know, and it's like then you're strutting around like you're all that, and then this guy like you know saved 1,200 Jews from the Holocaust. Yeah. It's like really, there's just nothing. Why do I even try?
Yeah.
You won't even recycle.
No.
So you're not even trying.
No, I kicked a homeless guy today. I mean, honestly, he was, you know, he was in my, you know, there was, I swear to God, there was an, this, I was it you Shomo. I was talking to him about this? No, it was Scott and Lily. I was talking to Scott Daly and his lady friend. And are they still just, is it like boyfriend, girlfriend? What is she? I don't mean to be.
What is she?
No. I don't mean like that. I mean, like, I don't know. They live together.
Yeah.
Is it still just boyfriend, girlfriend if you live together for a long period of time? Is there some other linguistic term?
His heterosexual life partner?
I just never know. It's like, no idea. The reason
sitcom significant
there's
other?
There's a point in adulthood when boyfriend and girlfriend just sound silly.
But it sounds silly because the reason this came up, and it's not because Scott is old, although he is because, you know, because my mom has a gentleman friend that she's, you know, but they've been like seeing each other,
But man friend, woman friend sounds like what Tarzan and Jane would be.
And for like 10 years. I mean, it's not like she just met him like last week at like a swap meet. I mean, they've been together for like a decade. They don't live together, but I mean, they've been seeing each other for like 10 years. But my mom is like 76. So, I mean, it's like boyfriend, I guess for her, it sounds kind of awesome, actually. Yeah. But I just never know what
like,
he's supposed to say.
Does he make mixtapes on like wax cylinders and...
on his gramophone.
Well, I know that about a year or so ago, we went to one of the midnight movies, and I was talking to both Lily and Scott, and Lily was just making conversation and asking about Patrick and I, and said, so how long did you guys see each other before you got married? And I said, well, we actually got engaged about 3 months in, and we were married less than a year after we met. And from just behind her and over her head, Scott goes, don't tell her that.
Yeah. No, because that's where Lily does the whole, are you listening?
That's just a good point, Don.
It's just my artist rendering. What was my point? But I was talking to them about the homeless guys in the neighborhood and how we have this fence. You know, we have a little gate in front of our house. But even now with the gate, it doesn't happen quite as frequently as it used to. But there would just be homeless guys that would just sort of like settling because I guess the way that the steps in front of our house are cement steps, they're spaced out just enough that they function as sort of an ad hoc seat where you can sit down and get some real lumbar support and just soak up the sun like some sort of train riding cat, you know.
Say
and
that
just...
about the homeless. I mean, as much of a nuisance as they might be, they are not vitamin D deficient.
No, and so, but
so your steps are ergonomically hobo designed,
right? So it's like if you just got off a tramp steamer and you're on your way to, you know, Sandy apparently, which everybody's going, you can just sit down on the steps in front of my house and just soak up the rays. And now that we've got the gate, that doesn't happen a lot, but somebody left it open the other day, and so I walk out of my house, and sure enough, there's a homeless guy just like, right, and it's like not even on the sidewalk, it's like literally up the steps and like on my property. And it's like, I'm not like I'm some big macho guy about it, but I mean, come on. And so then I have to do the whole thing of, then you have to find yourself turning into one of those like 1950s guys where you're saying things like, time to move along, friend.
You know? Clear out, see?
Nothing, this doesn't concern you.
Hit the bricks, pally.
All right.
Get on them walking sticks.
Time to beat feet.
Here's the thing. A homeless guy is just a listener who hasn't subscribed yet. So maybe not catch a few more hobos with whiskey than with like with citric acid. I don't know.
God damn! It's like a guy told me that he saw his next door neighbor being arrested by like the when the marshals came in, those guys that come with the hazmat van and for like meth labs. And he saw his next door neighbor. They were like kicking in the door and dragging him out of the car. And he was wearing like a Rick Emerson Show T-shirt.
And
he said that he was like he said literally, and this is sort of great. He said he was like running for the camera, and the guy was already in the squad car by the time he got out there. He's like so desperately did he want to take a picture of the guy being put in the back of a car wearing a Rick Emerson Show shirt.
Cop is shoving him his head down into the car. He's like, best show ever.
All right, let's see. What are we doing here? Let's see. We were doing this. Wait, hold on a second. Before we do today's installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101, we should say that it is brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them by calling 503-252-1609, although you probably don't want to find out about them. You probably want to find out about them first and then call, because otherwise you're going to tire out Donna. You're going to vex her almost immediately by just going, so what do you do? And then she's just going to have to explain it to you. And then, like, you know, the first or second or ninth time that happens, you know, she'll eventually get cross about it, and then it's going to blow back on us. So in any event, somebody is opining the various ways that Squires might be able to assist with your love life or any sort of the any of the marital obligations that one might find oneself unable to fulfill.
If you need to, like, you know, upgrade your wall sockets, you know, because you're moving up to the 920 volt.
If somebody's
whatever.
Just, if you're not getting enough RPMs on that thing, you're just finding that it's, you can see the top of the mountain, but you can't quite reach the summit. Then
you're tired of cranking, and you want to just be able to flip a switch.
Exactly.
This exhaust fumes from the gas powered engine.
Yes, that.
Clean solar power is really the way to go.
Squires Electric can be reached at 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. And if you want to have something repaired, installed, upgraded, or if you're going to be buying, you're going to be moving, you're going to be moving out, you're going to be moving in, you're getting some other guy to sell you a place, you want to make sure that he's not, you know, selling you not so much a pig in a poke, but like your family in a death trap, you can look into that too. Make sure that everything isn't just going to go flambe mode when, you know, your first night in the house. Squires Electric are based right here in Portland, Oregon. Of course, Joe Squires himself is from the area, and I swear to Christ, worked on nuclear submarines, and now actually just, he comes to your home and fixes a light. So really, if he can do one, he can do the other. And there's just no getting around that fact. That is irrefutable, I would say. Contact them at facebook.com/SquiresElectric. While you're there, please hit the like button and tell them you heard it here at the Rick Emerson Radio Program. They help to make the Rick Emerson Show and Legion of News possible for you. That is Squires Electric. What does this mean? Somebody says... In the text box, you should hire one of those homos to guard your place while they sleep there.
I think he meant hobos.
And then right after that, he types hobos. Hobos. I meant hobos. Awesome. Okay, the M and the B really are right next to each other, though, to be fair. Okay.
Well, there's an N in between, so really.
Yes. All right. Okay. That's an inadvertent thing. Let's just take a moment here to reset, and we'll just... Awesome. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, please give your attention to Mr. Big Jim Willig. He is here for another exciting installment of Humor Me Comedy 101.
Thank you very much, Mr. Emerson. Well, the gold standard for comedic actors has always been larger than life. For most, unfortunately, this means everything has to be over the top. Excessively ridiculous mannerisms with flailing limbs and stupid facial contortions, which just proves that you can't actually spoon-feed someone a ham-fisted premise without losing a little bit of the oomph behind the punchline. Are you listening, Mr. Williams, Mr. Carey, and Mr. Cook?
Hello! All righty then.
You guys feeling great?
We get it. Now please lower the dosage. But some find the human way to knock over the audience with a feather is to be funny while being so completely vulnerable and human. And not only do they lose themselves within the character, but we follow right along with them. Say hello to John Candy.
I'm a Mog, half man, half dog. I'm my own best friend.
From the small Canadian stages of SCTV to the silver screen alongside Steve Martin, Dan Aykroyd, and Richard Pryor, Mr. Candy proved without a shadow of a doubt that not only could he hold his own against these heavy hitters, John could actually upstage them, sometimes with nothing more than a smile.
Where do you live?
In the city.
Do you have a house?
Apartment.
On a rent?
Rent.
What do you do for a living?
Lots of things.
Where's your office?
I don't have one.
How come?
I don't need one.
Where's your wife?
Don't have one.
How come?
It's a long story.
Do you have kids?
No, I don't.
How come?
It's an even longer story.
Are you my dad's brother?
What's your record for consecutive questions asked?
38.
I'm your dad's brother, all right.
You have much more hair on your nose than my dad.
How nice of you to notice.
John Candy was a solid comedy performer and a heartfelt leading man. He was the uncle you wish you had, the best friend anyone could ask for to help spend $30 million, and the secret weapon to win any war.
You're a lean, mean, fighting machine! I'll do it!
And with that, I turn things over to the only two other 1941 fans in the room with me, Rick Oxberger Emerson and Don Funny She Doesn't Look Drewish Taylor. Your thoughts on the late and great John Candy.
Don Taylor in the back.
John Candy is one of those actors that when I first think of him, for some reason, my first thought is like, John Candy. And I don't really realize how much I love him.
Yeah.
And then when I start thinking about all of the things that he's done over the years and the things I've seen him in, I think about him, you know, doing the Dr. Tongues 3D House of Stewardesses sketch on Second City and as Johnny LaRue on Second City. And I think about him in Splash, that hilarious scene where he's playing
the
racquetball,
yeah,
with Tom Hanks in Splash. I think, and just a couple of months ago, Uncle Buck was on TV, and I went, oh, Uncle Buck, and I didn't think much of it, and I ended up just sitting and watching the entire thing and laughing my ass off. And I realized that I just, me personally, I completely underrate John Candy in my own mind.
Yeah.
Because he was just a genius of comic timing. Absolutely brilliant.
He was. And a lot of times, I'd say the way you can truly gauge someone is the fact that he doesn't need to be the sole person standing in the spotlight, that he can increase the overall humor power of a scene by helping others kind of to elevate them, to kind of be a team player. And when the time comes for him to kind of do it, to sort of take the reins as well, and that kind of encourages others to back him up.
A lot of that comes
much.
From being a guy who came out of Second City. I mean, he trained for a long time doing improv, and if you watch the old Second City sketch comedy show with him working opposite, you know, Eugene Levy and Moranis and those guys, just the teamwork and the give and take and the allowing each other to be hilarious really served him well, you know, as he became more and more of a star as he went along.
Yeah, I'd say SNL was an animal where you had a bunch of improvers up there, but they all kind of wanted that one line that would kind of like kick the thing over the top, so that they would have the credit for it. Whereas with SCTV, you got like with other Canadian improv groups like Kids in the Hall, you got the sense that it was very much a team effort, that they were all working together for the purposes of making the scene funny. But yeah, John just was one of those guys where he was a big guy, he was overweight, but he didn't make that his one note. You know, like God bless Chris Farley, but pretty much he was the big guy in everything that he did. He didn't try to kind of outstep that, because he was afraid if he did, he would lose his appeal. John could be like in small films like Only the Lonely with Ally Sheedy. You know, he could play the roles where like you almost forget that he is as big as he is, and you just kind of get to know the person, not just the girth and the first thing that you see.
Well, kind of like John Belushi, he was able to be really big and play stuff really broad, and have this sort of crude eyebrow waggly sort of persona.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there was this basic sweetness to him that kind of ran through almost everything he did.
And you know, a lot of people they immediately jumped to Uncle Buck just because of the fact that it was really, I think, his first time to kind of step out as the leading man. And not just that, but also like a little bit of a you know, I'd say a tough guy, you know, being in a comedic way. All the scenes where he's at the bowling alley and his buddy Pal shows up. He's like, got a game going somewhere, Pal? You're not going to get any strikes sitting there, are you? And, you know, kind of like rousts him out. And, of course, when the drunk clown shows up for the birthday party, he's like, get in your mouse, get the hell out of here. You know, just all of those little
parts. One of the scenes that Rick has audio on that he plays as a show opener sometimes is Candy in the principal's office.
Oh, yeah.
In Uncle Buck, which is just a brilliant piece of writing and beautifully delivered. Yeah. Absolutely gorgeous.
The thing about Candy is, I was actually thinking about this the other day with, I forget who used this term about Louis C.K., but it's true of Candy, it was true of Candy. I don't know that he created this, but it was true of Candy as well, and long before a guy like Louis C.K. was on the scene, that I think they were talking about Zach Galifianakis, and they were saying that in a weird way, the point they were essentially trying to make is that Galifianakis has this sort of interesting niche that he's carved out in movies like The Hangover, where he is like the alpha loser.
Yeah.
Where he doesn't really, as the character, doesn't really have anything going for him. You know, he's kind of fat and schlubby and unemployed and dense and, you know, and constantly getting into trouble and makes the wrong decisions.
But
and,
he owns it.
Yeah, he has like no actual, he has actually, there's nothing about his personality. He has no character traits or accomplishments or attributes to recommend him. And yet he somehow ends up being the alpha male despite all that. And Candy was a dialed down version of that. I mean, the Uncle Buck is probably the best example of that persona, because the thing about Buck is, like, that's the guy you wanted as your uncle. And he was, and the brilliant thing about Uncle Buck, and a lot of it is in the writing and with his interplay with John Hughes, but it's also in Candy himself, is that it was just exaggerated enough, it was just elevated enough that it was idealized to the point that you'd want that as your uncle, but it didn't seem unachievable. In other words, he didn't seem like a guy who couldn't exist. He just seemed like a guy that was a little cool. It was just cool enough that you would probably never luck out to get him as your uncle. But a lot of the movies where Candy shines, or, you know, he does that same thing, where it is the guy who, despite all of life's adversities and despite all of the decks being stacked against him, manages to assert himself as a sort of strong character, even in movies that aren't that good. There's a terrible film, which for some reason I've seen like 1,000 times, because I think it's one of the only movies that we had on VHS. With Eugene Levy, he was in this movie Armed and Dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
With Robert Loggia and Meg Ryan. and it's just awful. It's a terrible film. But Candy has that same kind of persona going, where it's like he's a schlub and he's a loser and he's unemployed and he can't get any work and but he has this great sort of like confident sort of strut with him, within himself that he carries throughout the film. And the other thing about John Candy is, and this, I don't think this is just because he's dead. I don't think this is a sort of thing that we retrospectively put on him. When you think about John Candy, I think invariably people smile. I think he makes you feel good.
Yeah.
And he didn't always play good guys. I mean, if you go back and watch, I mean, it's a small role, but it's a great role. If you watch Candy in JFK, he's great in JFK, and just slimy and sleazy and scurrilous and disreputable and untrustworthy, but great. And Candy did have those moments. I mean, even really, when you think about it, his character in Splash was just sort of skeezy.
Yeah.
You know?
But skeezy in such a delightful, charming way.
Right.
See, where he shows up down at the fruit warehouse, and he's got got a fistful of Penthouse magazines and starts screaming about how his letter got in.
Right.
So Tom Hanks is just kind of like trying to crawl down into his own shirt.
You know, and the same thing in Armed and Dangerous. There's this whole long sequence that just involves him and Eugene Levy in like a nudie booth. And Candy's trying to see the chick's naked form, and yet the door keeps going down, and he keeps having to like find, give me a quarter, and he keeps trying to find a quarter to put in the thing to get the door to go up. Or, you know, in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, where as much as it's tempting to look at Steve Martin as the sort of alpha male in that movie, he's really not, because he doesn't instigate any of the action. Nothing happens because of Steve Martin. He does not control any of the scenes. Del Griffith, John Candy, who again, if you look at him on paper, that character is an absolute zero. I mean, he's a beta. He's a nothing. But not only does he control the action in the film, not only is he what they call the instigating element in all of those scenes in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, but the most brilliant sequence to me in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and there are a lot of them, but the most brilliant sequence in that movie is the thing that gives it so much texture and depth. It is the moment when they realize they need money, and so Del just goes to work selling shower curtain rings to people.
Yes!
Because it shows that he's not a loser. He does have ability. He has skill. He is talented. He's good at something, and he is very, very accomplished and assertive in his own way when he wants to be, and in a certain narrowly defined area of his life. It would have been too easy just to make Del Griffith just a flat-out nothing, just to make him completely a waste of a human being. But Hughes does this brilliant thing with Candy of making Del Griffith actually really skilled and good at something, dominant at something. And that, you know, and that plays so well with Candy because Candy, he was often the butt of the joke, his character was, and he was sort of a stooge, and he's kind of, you know, the big fat guy and whatever, but he never carried it like that. Even when he was doing, like, side roles, like in Brewster's Millions or whatever, he always made those so much more than they could have been.
Absolutely. I mean, if you want a perfect example of John Candy kind of, like, taking that part and making it more than what the paper kind of had it to be, they kind of remade Planes, Trains, and Automobiles with Robert Downey Jr. and Zach Galifianakis in a way, and it just tanked. It's like it just sort of like appeared and was gone off the radar rather quickly because of the fact that they were just kind of like, well, you know, the recipe obviously works. Yeah, but without that ingredient, without the X factor that you had, both where, like you said, most of the attention was on Steve Martin, so you had no idea the whole time that pushing that story along was John Candy. And like when you realize that, you know, he's actually I wouldn't say like delusional or whatever, but like when you find out like the true story about Del at the very end, you're just like, oh wow, like your heart just
kills you.
Yeah, just like you're thrown for a loop. So you're like, wow, he like the whole time yeah, again, just the mark of a true a master.
And
I feel
it is also with Candy, like the timing thing, which is, and I hate to pick on Chris Farley, but that is, if you look at Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, right next to Tommy Boy, and I love Tommy Boy, I really do.
Yeah,
but I mean, one is very much the you know, the lesser imitation of the other. I mean, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is clearly like the A movie in that field, at least in the modern era. I mean, probably since the Out of Towners, you know. But the guys on the road where everything goes wrong. I mean, Tommy Boy is obviously the sort of the weak sister there, but it's for a lot of reasons. One of them is Candy's timing in things that either shouldn't work or don't read as funny on the page as they end up being on the screen. There's that whole sequence where they're on the road and the couple's going, "You're going the wrong way!" And, you know, and they're both out of it. They don't know what they're talking about. And Candy, like, looks over and mimes the whole thing of, like, you know, that they're drinking, that they're drunk. And he does the thing of, like, tipping and then, like, doing the sloshy drunk face, which is just gold. And, like, you can't write that into the script. You can't write what sort of facial expression and mannerisms you should use.
Yeah.
That is a thing that, like, you just have to know. The other great... I was actually just thinking about this in the kitchen yesterday for some reason. I don't know why. One of the funniest moments that Candy ever had on film for me is a thing that is probably not in the script, and again, that you couldn't script, and you almost couldn't direct. It's like the actor either knows it and does it or doesn't. There's no teaching how to do this. It is in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and it's when they're in the hotel room, and they're having their first sort of bonding thing, you know, because they've gone through so much together, and they're drunk, getting drunk off the mini bottles.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Candy's doing the whole thing about, like, you know, "I've gone to Havana, man. Have a nice day," or whatever. And they're doing the whole thing of trading the mini bottles back and forth. And Candy, at one point, just gets into this long, like, protracted giggle fest. And he stands up and he goes and he steps into the bathroom and shuts the door. And then, for no reason, opens the door again for a second and just kind of leans back out and giggles some more. And then goes in and shuts the door a second time. And I don't think it's scripted, and I don't think... I would imagine that is improv. I would bet you my bottom dollar. There's no reason on earth, because it's not even an obvious, like, laugh moment. It's not a joke. It's just that Candy goes to shut the door, opens it, looks out, giggles again, and then shuts the door. And it's a great, brilliant moment of just acting on instinct and just the sort of knowing and internalizing the rhythm of the scene. And again, that's a thing that, you know, the guy's either got it or he doesn't. So it's, you know, yeah, I don't know. He really was a guy that I think we were, as corny as this sounds, that we were, I think, lucky to get as many great films out of him as we did in the time that he was here. Because he did a lot of not so great films. Not like anybody's going to, you know, Canadian Bacon, woo! Yeah. You know, or something, you know, or Wagons East or whatever.
I mean, that his last one.
Wagons East was the movie he died on. He died making that. And then Canadian Bacon, which is a dreadful film, a terrible film. But when you think about the number of films he was in that he either starred in or was a great part of, like Splash, I mean, and even Brewster's Millions, which has its moments. I mean, he was in a lot of great films and gave us a handful of classics, you know.
Stripes, you got Spaceballs. I mean, these are like classics, the likes of which will always kind of like have their spot.
And just like the 1-2 punch of Uncle Buck and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I mean, like, how many comic actors, especially guys who it would be easy to pigeonhole because, hey, well, we'll just make him the fat guy. How many actors who get pigeonholed early on ever get to make one movie like that, let alone two? And in Uncle Buck, where he's like, where he's running this gauntlet of having to compete with not just kid actors, but Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah.
And I mean, it, as dumb as it sounds, it would be easy for Macaulay Culkin to steal every scene that he was in and for Candy to be totally overshadowed, you know, by just the cute factor of that kid. But he totally plays it back and has a real natural interplay with the kids, which is difficult to do.
With the whole, when he makes him the birthday cake.
You should see the toast.
I couldn't even get it in the room.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and it really was, you know, it took his cuteness and gave it a run for its money, and I would say stole a couple from them too. And then, like, not just the kid actors, and then, like, slightly older, where he's interacting with the high schoolers, with the older sister, and he's going to the party, and, like, he's kind of like walking through, just like, "Hey, who is this?" You know,
right?
And then just the part where he, you know, breaks in on the boyfriend, who you think he's about to do something messed up with the daughter, and find out that he's even, like, extra slimy because he's trying to, like, take advantage of some other girl behind her back,
right.
And he's just like, you have that moment of him just being like, you know, oh, he feels so bad for his niece, but then, like, that look of, like, but I know how to make it all better. And then the next thing you know, he's in the trunk.
Right.
Oh, God.
Like with the power drill.
So beautiful.
Gnat?
Yeah.
Bug? So.
Not to kill. No, just to maim. Just a little off the kneecap. So good.
I think on that note, and of course, you dicks, I won't get to the top five here because Greg and Sarah are going to get into the studio in a minute.
You owe someone some money.
I know. Well, fortunately, he never specified an amount, so I think it's just a wager of my honor, which is like so minuscule as to almost be non-existent. What is coming up performance-wise for you, Big Jim Willig?
I have a show coming up in, July 13th at Gresham Bowling Alley. Please feel free to judge on my Facebook your likes and or dislikes. More information on that
right
show will come as we get closer to the actual date.
Excellent. So. You can find out more at BigJimWillig.com. That is BigJimWillig. BigJimWillig.com. Should I tell people about chocolates, blah, 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 blah?
No.
Okay. All right. There you go. By the way, somebody said that after hearing your observation that, quote, you can... if you get that, something about, if you get that fully aroused, you can dip it in almost anything. He said that he was wondering if it was, quote, safe to order any of your chocolates. And I don't believe that that is a thing that you offer. It's not like you're offering a,
No. I mean, you know, whatever you do with them once you've purchased them in the privacy of your home, that's between you and your God.
You're not offering, like, the Mick Jagger model or anything of the, okay, all right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. We will leave you with a little bit of Uncle Buck here, and then after a brief interlude, we'll have an encore of today's Legion of News and an encore of this very fine radio program. We'll see you Monday at noon. Thank you for listening, as always. It is Friday, June 10th, 2011, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, have a good weekend. Be safe. See you Monday. Bye now.
Warning.
I'm Anita Horgarth.
Buck melanoma. Molly Russell's wart. Uncle. Maisie Russell's uncle. I'm her uncle. her mother set up this conference with you.
I'm assistant principal here, as you've probably noticed from the indications on the door.
This door?
You mean outer door.
The outer door?
Yes.
Because there's nothing on this one.
That's just about enough of that.
Sorry.
I've been an educator for 31.3 years, and in that time, I've seen a lot of bad eggs. I say eggs because at the elementary level, we are not dealing with fully developed individuals. I see a bad egg when I look at your niece. She is a twiddler, a dreamer, a silly heart. She is a jabberbox. And frankly, I don't think she takes a thing in her life or her career as a student, seriously.
She's only six.
That is not a valid excuse. I hear that every day and I dismiss it.
I don't think I want to know a six-year-old who isn't a dreamer or a silly heart. And I sure don't want to know one who takes their student career seriously. I don't have a college degree. I don't even have a job. But I know a good kid when I see one. Because they're all good kids, until dried-out, brain-dead skags like you drag them down and convince them they're no good. You so much as scowl at my niece, or any other kid in this school, and I hear about it, and I'm coming looking for you. Take this quarter. Go downtown and have a rat gnaw that thing off your face.